Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. The holidays are nearly upon us. Amid the shopping, decorating, baking, extra hours and work, and whatever else may occupy your time in the next couple of weeks before family and friends come to your home or you leave your home behind to go someplace else, we want to do what we can to ensure that your home remains in good working order. And to that end, we welcome back Scott Spees, who is here to field your questions about home maintenance. Scott, welcome back to Focus.
Well, thank you, Craig. Always a pleasure to come on the show.
Scott joins us from time to time to answer such questions on anything, really everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements, pretty much anything that goes into your home, he is ready to discuss, whether you're facing the prospect of repairs or thinking about making some changes or just want to keep your house in the best possible condition as the holidays and ever colder weather arrive. While there is much I could ask Scott, really this hour is yours, so please do call 333-9455. Or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on our Facebook page. We are at Will Radio TV Online. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Scott, I suppose we should lead off with, you've got a little bit of news in your life. You're sort of shifting gears in your career a bit.
Well, the home inspection business has been falling off a little bit for me here lately, and it was a big part of my father, who is not doing well in health. So at the moment, I'm not doing home inspections. I still am doing some consulting work and still answering questions, such as what we've got here on our program here today. But yeah, at the moment, I'm not really doing the home inspections.
And you're still an apartment owner, and you're still involved in lots of ways. And
yes, we still have some rental properties, and I have a friend of mine with a apartment maintenance company, and so I help give him a hand helping out. So I'm still in the industry. I'm just not doing the home inspections.
But you are moving on also to some other things, right?
I have been appointed as the technical director for the National Association of Diesel Motorsports, which is a drag racing and sled pulling. It's more of a weekend type thing, but it's a lot of fun. Gets me out to go play race car once in a while.
Well, congratulations on that. And okay, so you're going from focusing on homes to focusing on getting away from a home, driving as far away and as quickly as possible from a home.
Well, I have been in the automotive industry, working with NHRA and a few things, doing technical work and also just track workers stuff. And some racing on my own back in 2000, 2001. So I've been part of the automotive industry for quite some time. Okay. That was my hobby, and the home inspection was the job. Now we're going to kind of try and do a little shift here, see if we can't make the racing more of a position and the home inspection or the home maintenance issues more of a hobby.
Well, maybe we'll get a call from somebody in a mobile home, and we can take care of both at the same time. All right, so let's start off today talking a little bit about, you know, winter really felt like, I know, you know, meteorological winter has begun, but the actual winter, it doesn't begin yet for a couple more weeks, kind of felt like it arrived overnight.
I was a little surprised we haven't had some snow already. Yeah, I did have to get up and scrape the frost off the windows the other morning. So, yes, it's cold out. Probably one of the things I'd be telling homeowners is to go walk around the house and take all the hoses off. If you've got a garden hose that's still connected up, probably not a good thing. It's likely to freeze, and if it freezes, there's a possibility of actually breaking the hose spigot or even the pipe inside the house, depending on the style of hose spigot. Also, your garden hose will last a lot longer if you take it off and drain it out so that it does not get the freezing, the expansion inside the hose. So, yeah, it's one of the first things I was doing when I got back this weekend is I walked around the house and said, oh, yeah, I forgot about this. Got to take that hose off there.
Something else that we talked about last time was the need to remove, like, leaves from gutters, that kind of thing. What impact does having some sort of obstruction in a gutter, especially as it gets colder and we deal with the potential of freezing rain, that kind of thing, what impact can that have on your home?
Well, if the gutter is full and doesn't drain well, then obviously it fills up with water. This time of year, the water freezes, turns into ice. We end up with more water pushing down on it. It actually will pull the gutter off the house and start working the gutter out. Because once it fills with the ice and then we get water coming on top of it and it keeps wanting to expand, it actually has forces that will try and pull the gutter away from the house itself. So making sure that it's clean and free of debris so that it does flow on the days when the sun comes out and it melts things off, the gutters clear out, will reduce the chances of having a problem with the gutters coming off. And, of course, this time of year, well, wintertime, icicles. Well, an icicle means that the gutter's probably full, because if the water, if the snow is melting and coming off the roof and getting into the gutter, then it should be draining out. If the gutter actually fills with ice and we start getting the icicles, then it's pretty heavy and it's trying to push it off. So usually if I see a house that has a lot of icicles, I'm like, huh, I'll bet the downspout's blocked on that one.
Well, I bet also another issue would be once you have all those, you know, icicles, whatever kinds of obstructions you have, eventually you're talking about water freezing on the roof itself, and that can eventually melt and leak into the house.
If you start noticing icicles that are forming in the soffit area, the overhang area behind the gutters, there's a chance that you are getting some water in behind the shingles, either from ice damming, which is the technical term for when we have an ice buildup at the outside. When snow lands on a roof, and the heat from the house tends to heat the attic, it goes up. Any heat we have, heat rises. Hopefully we have enough insulation in the attic that we get very little heat transfer from the house to the attic, but there is always some. And as the attic warms up, the snow next on the shingles tends to melt and run down. Well, when it gets to the eaves, the soffit areas, there's no longer any heat coming from underneath, so it tends to freeze up. Sometimes before it gets to the gutters. So if we start building this ice dam or get this buildup of ice at the end of the roof, we actually start making a little retention pond where it holds water, and then the water can wick back underneath the shingles and start deteriorating the roof sheathing, the plywood. Now, ice damming usually happens when we have severe cold weather and then lots of snow or a little bit of sleet. Because, and the reason I say severe is because the water has to melt first, but then refreeze as it rolls down the shingles. So in years when we have a couple of days where it's below 5 or 6 degrees, 5 or 10 degrees, I get several more calls for ice damming than in years where it goes from 30 degrees down to zero and back up to 30. So when we have 2 weeks of really cold weather, that's when I start having issues with the ice damming.
Well, we haven't had that yet, and we haven't had ice or snow yet. But I imagine one of the things people are thinking about right now is, how do I keep cold air from sort of seeping into the house? How do you make sure that you're well insulated?
Well insulated and keeping air in and out is two separate things. Okay. First of all, air infiltration. You always have some infiltration. A newer home may have 3 or 4 air exchanges in a 24-hour period, where an older home, say a mid-20s farmhouse or something like that, may have as many as 20 or 24 air exchanges in a 24-hour period. Obviously, 20 or 24 air exchanges means you've got to heat all the air, and then it leaves an hour later, so you've got to heat it all again, and it's quite expensive. So we want to really bring that down. But we also don't want to live inside of a plastic bag. We don't want to wrap the house up so tight to where there's no air moving through it. You cook fish on Friday, it's still there on Sunday. It's not going to be a fun thing. It does create mold and mildew problems, moisture problems. So the house has to breathe somewhat, but generally speaking, there are enough holes and enough gaps in things that doing the best you can to seal up everything you can find is not going to be a bad idea.
So what are some ways to maybe reinforce a window frame or a door where maybe cold air seems to kind of seep in?
Most of the time, the windows are designed by the manufacturer to have a weather stripping. What I find on older homes is people forget to close the storm window. All right. If you haven't got your storm window closed, I'm guessing you're probably not going to have to worry about bugs and screens here in the next couple of months. It's time to do that. Go out there and close all the storm windows. Now, you don't necessarily need to make the storm windows 100% airtight. In other words, there should always be a gap at the bottom of the storm window so that we don't have water accumulating. Any frost that would form on the storm window, we don't want to melt and run down and not be able to run out the windowsill. So, but it should be sealed basically on 3 sides and have the window closed just so we don't have a lot of air movement. I guess I should go back and kind of explain insulation. What is insulation? Insulation is a material that we use to reduce airflow. Air is the main heat transformation media. If you have air blowing against something, you can cool it down or heat it up. If you have a stagnant air area where there's no movement of the air, then it's not transferring the heat from one item to another. So let's say we have a double hung window or double pane window. double pane window has two pieces of glass with an inert gas in between. And so we have no air movement on the window on the inside from the outside. So basically the inside pane doesn't have the cold air moving next to it, so it doesn't transfer heat as quickly. There is still some transfer because as the glass gets cold, cold air falls down. So there's a little bit of thermal movement, but it's not actually wind blowing against it. An older window, which is a single pane window that has a storm window. If you close a storm window, you have 2 to 3 inches between it and the prime window, and we have very little air movement in that 2 to 3 inches. So therefore, we reduce the amount of heat loss through that glass. Glass is a horrible insulator if it's a single pane. If there's air moving past it, it will just, well, put your hand on there, and you'll notice that the glass gets quite cold.
Yeah.
And you've already got heat coming from the house. So it's trying to heat up. So what I would recommend right off the bat for air infiltration is make sure if you've got a wood framed window that you've got either a double pane window or you have a good storm window and the storm windows are closed. If you've got a wood front entrance door, particularly one with the decorative little slots, the 6-panel doors, make sure you've got a decent storm door on that because, well, where those 6 decorative panels are, the wood is actually only about 1/4 inch thick on the edges, so it offers little or no insulating value. Now, the steel doors, they have a full foam core. They don't really require the storm door to help insulate, but the wood doors really benefit from a storm door.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're welcoming your questions today about the care and maintenance of your home. For home maintenance consultant Scott Spees, we invite your questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements, really anything inside of or attached to your home. If you're thinking of making some changes or maybe something needs to be repaired, you can give us a call right now at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email a question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Those phone numbers again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. And we'll start this morning with Kathy in Urbana. Good morning, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I have two quick questions. I have a single-story home that's on a crawl space, and I noticed there are vents around the foundation of the house, and I didn't know if I should... When should I open those and close those?
Well, that's a good question. It's more of if there's a moisture problem in the crawl space, whether you ever need to open them at all. If the crawl space is relatively dry, I generally recommend closing them and probably insulating them. If you've got some moisture, some high humidity in the crawl space usually it's from improper grading around the house or lack of downspouts or lack of gutters, then yes, we want to open them occasionally. But that seems to be mostly the spring and the fall. In the summertime, when it's really, really hot and humid outside, we really don't want all that warm, humid air going underneath the crawl space where our ductwork is for our furnace, because then we'll get condensation on our furnace ducts because we're running all the air conditioning and cold air through them. In the wintertime, we don't want them open because we don't want that nice, brisk air hitting our water lines and possibly freezing a pipe. So I would say at this point in time, they should be closed and preferably insulated.
Okay. Thanks.
It's not that difficult to insulate them. You could either put something over them from the outside, or if you don't mind getting into the crawl space, cutting a block of styrofoam that you can push into the hole around it will really help warm the crawl space. And if the crawl space is warm, then any heat loss from the ductwork and such from the furnace will rise and help warm the floors, so it'll actually help keep the floors warmer.
Great, thank you. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
All right, I have wall-to-wall carpeting that I'm replacing with solid bamboo,
mm-hmm.
and it's a floating floor, and it's a DIY project.
Okay.
And I'm trying to find out if I really need an underlayment between the plywood subfloor and the bamboo.
The bamboo product is usually stiff enough it will go over the top of plywood. The only time you'd need an underlayment is if you have a lot of irregularities in the floor. I don't know how old the house is, how it was constructed, but if you've got plywood there now, that is basically what we'll call a subfloor.
Mm-hmm.
The underlayment is used more when we have a very thin floor product, such as vinyl, to go over it, the underlayment helps smooth off the areas in the plywood that would telegraph through or show through as wood grain through a vinyl floor. But with your bamboo or with the laminate floorings that are available today, that unless you've got a floor that just has been patched together or a house that's had multiple additions, you probably don't need to have the underlayment to smooth things out.
Okay, so no vapor barrier needed or anything like that?
You don't want a vapor barrier there, no. A lot of times they'll put down a rosin paper, a red rosin paper, to basically help try and make it a little bit quieter. Most of the floors do come with some type of insulation, either that you roll out and put the floor on, or a little foam pad, or or something adhered to the back of each individual board. So there is something that goes down between the subfloor and the laminate flooring or your new style flooring, but it can be a piece of red paper, what they call an oil paper, or it may already be attached to the back of the product you've got.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. She referred to a floating floor. What does that mean?
Well, it means when the floorboards are cut and put down, they're not actually nailed to the floor. The pieces interlock with each other.
Yeah.
And they basically make it a big mat. That way, when there's a little bit of expansion and traction of the house or the flooring, we're not pulling nails, pushing things.
So it's not all sealed together. It's
right.
Just, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. Well, I guess we kind of do that, I mean, with carpeting.
Correct.
Anyway, right?
Right.
So, yeah. All right, let's go next to Ed in Mahomet. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is about some drafts I have in my house. Normally, when you build a house now, you put that blue foam on top of the foundation before you put the sill plate. I forget what that's called, but it seals that gap between the sill plate and the foundation. My house was built in 1960, and it doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get some pretty good drafts in there around down in the basement. I can walk around and feel it. And I'm wondering if there's a simple thing that a homeowner can do to address that. Do you have any suggestions?
Generally, if you can feel air coming through there, yes, we've got something that we probably ought to get some insulation at.
Mm-hmm.
In order for air to come in the house, air has to be going out of the house somewhere. So if you've got a lot of air leaks, such as drafty windows, that could be one of our air infiltration areas. Really, about the only way to thoroughly seal it is to use probably a spray foam. There are several manufacturers that make a foam in a can, or you can get a commercial guy to come out there and spray a thin layer of foam on there. That is the best way to actually seal that area.
Uh-huh.
You can push some insulation in those areas, because a lot of times what I found is what people are telling me are drafts or actually just a thermal air movement, where the band joist area, that 8 inches of wood above the basement floor, gets cold and the cold air drops, and so you end up putting your hand on the basement wall and you feel cold air coming down the wall.
Oh, this will blow a match out.
Ah, okay. Then, yeah, we need to get a tube of caulk up there to find where the gap is, or maybe some spray foam and try and seal the area up.
Yeah, it looks like it's between the top of the foundation blocks and the wood part.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to get at in that sense.
Yeah, but you should be able to run a bead of foam between the sill plate and the concrete block.
Yeah, they didn't fill the top course of concrete. The holes are still all open.
Well, in that case, there needs to be someplace the air is getting in from the outside as well. Probably the siding is down far enough you can't actually see that area.
Yeah.
So I would do some checking with a couple of the insulation contractors to see if somebody could come in there and give you an estimate on what it would take to put a thin layer of foam in that area. That would probably be your most effective way of controlling that.
Right. Are there any products available to homeowners to do that expanding foam thing you were talking about? I know there's that, you know, single cans, great stuff or whatever they call it. But
yes.
That doesn't go very far.
Right. There are some kits available, and you'll have to do some research online. I don't have any brand names of those kits at the moment,
yeah.
But there's a couple of different kits. And the one thing I will say is if you try and do it yourself, make sure you have A, plastic gloves.
Yeah.
B, about a 5-gallon bucket around so that if the nozzle ever sticks open, you've got something to stick it into to carry it outside rapidly before it starts getting anywhere.
Right.
Because once it gets on something, it's almost impossible to get things cleaned up.
Right.
So you have to use a lot of caution. That's why it's never really caught on as a big do-it-yourself project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yes, there are different systems available that will make up, you know, instead of a 12-ounce can, we end up with a 5-gallon bucket of material.
Right, right. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest today is Scott Spees. He joins us from time to time to answer your questions about home maintenance, and that means really everything from windows and siding to walls and ceilings and roofing and gutters and attics and basements, pretty much anything that goes into your home. He's ready to discuss whether you are facing the prospect of repairs or maybe thinking about making some changes or you just want to keep your home in the best possible condition. We welcome those phone calls this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions on our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find us on Facebook under Will Radio TV Online. Our Twitter handle's Will Public Media. Phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. A few minutes ago, you were talking about ducts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I heard some years back on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. They were doing a quiz about the value and the different uses of duct tape. And one of the things that they, one of their quiz questions was something that duct tape is not good at doing. It turns out, at least in this case, it was sealing ducts.
Well, okay, I can't say that it's not good for sealing ducts. It's just not a long-term solution. The duct tape, the glue on a duct tape will usually last about 6 months to a year. So if you don't mind rewrapping it every year, and most people don't want to do that because ducts are not in easily accessible area. So while duct tape was originally designed as a sealant for ducts, it has moved into more of a general purpose tape. There is several different types. There are several different types of tapes that we use for ducts, depending on what type of ductwork you've got. There is a metallic tape. Basically, it's a thin piece of foil with a very adhesive strip on the back of it. In other words, don't put it on your arm. You will lose hairs over it.
Uh-huh.
And that product will last 20 years. So, yes, there is material that we use for sealing the joints in the ducts, but duct tape is more of a general purpose tape at this point in time.
Well, of course, anybody that's ever watched Red Green realizes there are thousands of purposes for duct tape.
That would
aside
be a,
from all of
that's,
that.
That's a minor. A thousand wouldn't cover it.
All right, let's go next to Joan in Urbana. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning. I'm calling to ask if you still do house inspections.
I am not doing home inspections for pre-purchase inspections, but I am still doing them for maintenance issues. If you're looking to do some remodeling or if you've got a house that you just want to know what's going on, I can do that. But I have currently let my license with the state of Illinois lapse, so I'm not doing them for pre-purchase conditions.
It's not for pre-purpose, and I did call your number, and I was told that you weren't doing this anymore.
Yeah, the pre-purchase I'm not doing because of several different changes.
I wanted you to come because I had a problem.
Ah, well, that I could do.
And, okay, well, how do I get in touch with you then?
All right, the current number I'm using for the consulting work is 714-1110.
714-1110?
That is correct.
Okay. Is that a long-distance call?
No, it's not. It's a 217 number. It's a Champagne number.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right.
I'm glad to know you're still doing this.
Well, I'm sorry I'm so difficult to find.
All right. We'll go next to Bob in Bourbonnais. Bob, good morning.
Hi. Good morning to you. Thank you. We have a lower-level walkout level in our home, and ever since I've moved in six, seven years ago, there's been a little bit of mustiness, mildewiness, whatever that is. In the last couple months, it's gotten a lot stronger. So I've started looking for it. It's got a dropped ceiling with those fiber panels that you put in.
Mm-hmm.
The plumbing for the upstairs level runs above those panels. So, you know, it's in the joists and rafters of the lower level. I did find a leak in the pipe, and mold growing on the fiber panel underneath that. So I got rid of that, and for like 2 days it was better, and then it came back again. And I've started looking again. I fear I'm going to have to take off every one of those panels and try to find, maybe it's growing on the wood of the upper ceiling there, or it's on some of the panels. I'm calling to ask if there's a method to make my search more effective and efficient. Is there some kind of machine other than my nose, or are there people who are specialized in finding that, or what?
Well, there are people that can do air quality tests to determine whether or not the molds or mildew that you've got is actually harmful, kind of narrow it down to as to what type. My question would be, do you have carpet in that room?
Yes.
Okay. There's a very, very good chance that that's where the odor is coming from. As concrete gets cold, we can tend to get some condensation. If we get enough condensation to allow the mildew or mold to grow, it'll go dormant when it's dry, and in humid conditions, it will tend to grow again. And molds grow exponentially. You know, you get two cells split into four, fours to eight, eight to 12, or eight to eight, 16. Yeah, I got to work on my math, too. If you have some mold that has gotten into the carpet, and when it gets wet, then it's going to grow very rapidly, so it will create that smell. Usually a good cleaning, some mildew-resistant chemicals are out there. You don't generally want to use bleach because it usually takes color out of the carpet. But there's something you can do with I would say you've probably got something growing either in the padding or in the carpet itself that's probably where your odor source is. Mold in order to grow has to have two things. It has to have a moisture source, and it has to have a food source. It can't grow on concrete. It can grow on the dirt on concrete. It can grow on wood because wood, we've cut it down, is dead. It can grow on wood products. It can grow in linen-type products, but more likely it's going to grow in the dirt on these areas. So if you've got an area that can hold something that the mold will grow, such as dirt or wood or fiber, and you've got high humidity, you can get that mold growing. So the first thing we want to do is make sure we don't have the high humidity problem.
Well, there's a dehumidifier in this room that runs 24/7.
Okay.
And I have to empty it these days, every day, every 2 days.
Okay. And so what we need to do is find out, where's that moisture coming from?
Yeah.
If you're taking a bucket of water out of every day or every 2 days, somewhere it's getting back in. So
there are plants in there that we water.
Okay. And that can be a big thing depending on how many plants you have in there. Plants, aquariums, things like that all add moisture to the house. And have you tried moving the plants around to see if maybe that doesn't change some of that musty smell? You may have gotten plant growth in the soil that you're not aware of that is causing the odor.
Could water also just leak out of a plant and just, you know, just a few drops here or there somewhere?
Every now and then. Every plant is potted and has a saucer under it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'll water and I'll miss, and you know, some will go on the carpet and
That shouldn't be a problem. That should only be a few drops. What I'm worried is something a little bit more constant. In order for the mildew to grow, it has to have a nearly constant moisture source. There's a very good chance you've got something in some of your soil that is causing this odor. If you move the plants out of that area for a while, see if it goes down.
They're all ones that were brought in to overwinter. They're all outside plants that mm-hmm. were brought in. And I can't remember if this flare-up of the smell started before I brought them in or not.
So, I would say that there's a very good chance that it might be in that soil, and if it's not in the soil, it's probably in the carpet. Unless you've got a plumbing leak. If you've got a plumbing leak, such as the one that you found, then yes, that will contribute it, and you could end up with it in the ceiling. But that would not be the first place that I would look.
Okay. It seems to wax and wane, like it'll be real strong for 2 days, and then for a day or two, it'll be so mild that you hardly notice it.
And I think you'll find that is pretty much correlated with how the outdoor humidity is. On days when we have high outdoor humidity, it will probably be more noticeable than on days with low outdoor humidity, and that would be when the house gets humid and the mold and mildew begins to grow. When things dry out, it tends to go more dormant.
Bob, thanks very much for the call.
Well, thank you very much.
We're welcoming your questions today about the care and maintenance of your home for Scott Spies. We invite your questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements, really anything inside of or attached to your home. If you're thinking of making some changes or maybe something needs to be repaired, you can give us a call right now at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, and we will take more of your calls and emails after a short break. This is Focus.
After finishing the 13th and final volume of his Gothic children's books, A Series of Unfortunate Events, Lemony Snicket is back with a new noir series for kids. The first is called Who Could That Be at This Hour? On the next Fresh Air, we speak with Daniel Handler, also known as Lemony Snicket, and hear some music. He brought his accordion. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Programming on WILL is made possible by McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation at 5th and John Streets in Champaign, a welcoming and inclusive community living out a progressive approach to faith. McKinley Church's schedule of Christmas season services is available online at www.mckinley-church.org.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're taking your questions about the care and maintenance of your home for Scott Spies. We invite your questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements, really anything in or attached to your home. If you're thinking of making some changes, if there's something that needs to be repaired, you just want to know the best way to keep some part of your house working the way it's supposed to, give us a call at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Next up is Subhash in Urbana. Good morning.
Good morning. We recently got our crawl space insulated as a result of some incentives that the electric supply company was giving. In that process, the vents along the wall were closed. I'm wondering whether they should be reopened in order to keep the moisture out, or it's okay to keep them that way.
I would definitely leave them closed for the winter months and then go down in the crawl space and see if there's a moisture problem in the spring or fall. Most of the time, they can be left closed year-round. Unless you've got some water problems in the crawl space, you should not need that much ventilation. Now that you've got it, walls insulated, you should be able to leave those closed.
We have two sump pumps in there. One of them never works, never has to work, I guess, because there's hardly anything seeping in that area. The other one functions well when there is heavy rainfall or storms, but otherwise the crawl space is fairly dry. I've been in there for one thing or the other several times, and there was no wetness on the soil or anything. So I guess I could keep it closed.
Yes, and hopefully you've got a layer of plastic over the top of the soil in the crawl space.
Not throughout. I have it, I guess, in some parts and not in others.
That would be very, very important to reduce the moisture problem. A lot of the moisture in a crawl space is actually coming up out of the soil, so it is very, very important to have a good plastic vapor barrier over all of the soil surface in the crawl space.
Okay. Maybe I'll get that done.
Yeah, if you get the plastic put down there, you should be able to leave those vents shut.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next up is Stan in Champaign. Hi, Stan.
Hi.
What's your question for Scott Spies?
Our home is about 23 years old. It's kind of traditional two-story, four-bedroom, two-and-a-half bath. And we've put a new roof on it. We have a high energy efficiency furnace, and we've placed a water heater. And what we're looking to do is just kind of increase our overall energy. So I was wondering about, like, we have the toilets are 5-gallon flush, and whether or not I could do something to the interior, whether I'm looking at replacing them. Also, we have a sliding glass door out onto the patio, and we were thinking about, possibly upgrading it. And I was wondering about both of those and, like, faucets, whether you're starting to get a little leaking on the faucets, nothing bad. But if there's anything we might be able to do overall to improve our energy.
Well, always the lower flush toilets will use a lot less water, which will save you money in two places, because you get billed not only for the water that comes in, but they take a percentage of that and bill you for sewage treatment for water going out here in Champaign, if you're in our area. It's probably not going to save you a lot of money to go around and change out faucets if it has an occasional drip, other than the fact that it's just annoying to hear it drip, and we don't want to get anything in wet. So from that standpoint, yes, I would say some new toilets would be helpful.
Alrighty.
As far as the sliding glass door, and sliding glass doors are notorious air leakage areas. They don't seal well. I usually like patio-style doors where we have one fixed pane and one pane that swings, and you can get a lot better seal on something like that. Mm-hmm. But what you might want to consider is having an energy audit done on the home. They can come in and do what we call a blower door test, where they basically put a big fan at the front door, and they put a barometer inside and out, and they determine the pressure differential between inside and out with how many cubic feet of air the fan's moving, and basically how much air leakage your house has. There's also a thermal camera that they can use to find cold spots or warm spots in the house. And once
is there a better time of the year than another to do that? Does it matter?
It does matter. It actually works much better when it's cold out.
Okay.
It's a lot easier to find out where the heat's leaking out when it's 30 degrees outside than when it's 80 degrees outside.
And so, is it private, just like a private company, or does Ameren do that? Or?
I believe that Ameren had somebody that was doing it at some point in time. I know that a couple of the insulation companies here in town also do that. So it's something you'll have to do a little bit of research to find out exactly who. I don't give too many names out on the radio.
Sure,
but
I understand.
And I do know that, Illini Insulation here in Champaign-Urbana does have the capabilities of doing both thermal camera and blower door. So those would be probably your most effective tool for figuring out where you're going to get the most return for your money and your time.
I imagine you could probably just do a quick search, online. Champaign Energy Audit would probably cover it, something like that.
Right. That's good. That's been very helpful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Next up is Marlene in Effingham. Hi, Marlene.
Hello. Yes, I have a problem with a south-facing bedroom window. It has aluminum storm on it,
mm-hmm.
and whenever the weather turns cold, like it did this morning, I get a lot of moisture on the inside of that storm window, and it's the only window in the house that does that. What can I do?
All right. What is telling me, if you have moisture on the inside of the storm window, so it's between your prime window and your storm window?
Yes.
Okay. It probably means that your prime window is not sealing tightly, that some of your warm house air is going past that window, and so that the moisture from the house, from normal cooking, cleaning, showering, etc., mm-hmm. is getting to that storm window. And the storm window is doing its job in keeping the air from moving, but that moisture is condensing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is we want to look for some place where, if the window's not latching tightly, or if some of the weather strip around that window is missing,
mm-hmm.
but that would cause that frost.
Okay. Yeah, that's the only window that does that. So.
The only other thing I could think of is if you look at the bottom of it and make sure it's not too tightly sealed to the windowsill. If there's no daylight at the very bottom of the storm window.
Oh, of the storm window.
Yeah.
Would it help to raise the storm window up a little bit?
Well, what that'll do is it'll let air in there, and that air will reduce the amount of moisture, so it'll get rid of the frost, but it's going to increase the heat loss through that window.
Okay.
So, I would look at the bottom of it. If there's not a drain hole or a weep hole at the bottom of the storm window, you might want to drill a very small hole, say a 3/16 or an 1/8 inch hole at the bottom of the storm window that would normally let water out, but will also let just enough of the humidity out that it should reduce the frost on the window as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Right, thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go next now to John in Arcola. Hi, John.
Hello.
What's your question for Scott Spies?
It's been so dry the last few years that our house, especially over the crawl spaces, has been settling, and the doors don't close properly, and there's a lot of cracks in the plaster, and I just wonder whether the house could be raised on the foundation or whether how to correct this.
Well, it's always possible to try and re-level houses. It kind of depends on what has caused it to shrink. How old a house is it?
Oh, about 40 years.
Well, most of the time the shrinkage is due to the wood drying out, and I would have thought that that would have happened the first couple of years after the house was built. I won't say it's impossible for it to have lasted for 40 years before it really dried out. But if you're getting a little bit of movement, now it kind of depends on where the cracks are, is what direction they're generating from and to, as to what exactly is causing it. It would be something worth looking into, that's for sure.
Well, the ground is just drying out, and the foundation in the crawl space areas are just settling, like a couple, 3 inches. And then there's cracks opening on the outside, too. And I didn't know whether you should water your foundation to try to bring the moisture back and raise the foundations back up or not.
Okay, if you're actually getting settling of the foundation, then
yes.
we have a lot more serious issues there, because the foundation footing should be deep enough to where, unless you're sitting on a very, very high clay content area, we shouldn't be changing the moisture content of the soil down 30 inches or 35 inches. And if you've got some settlement of the foundation, then it, well, first of all, it's something more than what it's going to take more than just a radio program to correct. And I'm glad you've called. It's something to be have somebody definitely look at, because if the foundation is actually settling, I will have to say I'm getting a little coarse to people say, oh, I have settling cracks, because 9 times out of 10 they don't have settling cracks, they have wood shrinkage cracks. If you actually have a problem with the settlement, then we need to get somebody out there to come out and take a look at it and see what can be done with the foundation, because once that foundation does move like that, we have compromised the stability of the house, and we could have some significant structural issues. So you do need to have somebody come out and take a look at it if you feel you've actually got movement of that foundation.
Yeah. In fact, even the doors a lot of times don't close properly, and you hate to cut them off.
Okay. Interior doors or exterior doors?
Exterior doors.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you may have a problem. I would recommend getting somebody to come out and take a look at it and get a visual to really get the correct answer for what you need.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Marianne is in Champaign. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I live in a house that's about 6 years old, North Champaign, and when I turn on the hot water, it will take 30 minutes or so, 30 seconds or so, to get hot water with an electric water heater. It is all electric where I live. Is there any good option for improvement?
No, not really. What's happened is you've got a long length of line between the heat source and the faucet you're trying to use. And if you don't use it regularly, the pipe will cool off, and we have to run that water out to get to that warm water. If it's quite annoying and need to do something about it, there are a couple of different solutions we can do with them, but none of them are what I'll call energy saving. Most of the time it's in how we route the water lines. We can actually run a return line. We can take a line from the farthest faucet in the house and run it back to the water heater and allow for a natural thermal convection to keep the hot water kind of circulating. But it does mean they're still losing the heat from the pipe, so we're constantly have to heat that water back up. If you're having to wait 30 seconds, unless it's just really annoying, you need to have it right away, there's not a real easy, inexpensive, effective cure for that.
Thank you so much for your
it'd be nice if we had an easy button on that one, but in extreme cases I've run into some ranch houses where the water heater was literally 30 feet away, and in cases like that we've indicated the possible use of a small instant on water heater underneath the house and that at the other end. But for most cases, if it's 30 seconds to under a minute, you're probably better off just letting the water run for a minute.
We have a couple of emails that have come in over the course of the hour. Let's see if we can deal with these. Bonnie emails and says, I live in an older home that has some asbestos siding on the lower level. Ultimately, I'd like to have the siding replaced with stucco near the front door and with wood in the other areas for aesthetic reasons. I have scheduled painting for the spring. Are there any issues or concerns I need to be aware of?
Well, the asbestos siding is old enough that probably it's had multiple layers of paint already on it, so we don't have a problem with asbestos siding. We can't use a oil-based paint on it. The oils tend to mix with the alkaline and the asbestos and almost make a soap, so the paint doesn't stick. But I'm guessing that somebody's already painted it, so we don't have to worry about that. A good latex will work fine. The problem with asbestos siding is, of course, if the fibers become airborne. So you don't want to sand the asbestos siding because we don't want to fray the asbestos fibers and get them up in the air. And when removing the asbestos siding, it usually is encased in a concrete, and so they end up breaking the pieces, taking it off. And when the pieces are broken, some fibers can become airborne. I'm not as big of a worrywart about the asbestos as a lot of people in that. This asbestos siding, well, there's actually three different chemicals that were labeled as asbestos. And most of the white or chrysotile was what was used in residential. And it's not as prevalent as far as the medical issues. It's similar in fiber makeup if you look at it in a microscope. But it's not the same fiber that was used in the industrial stuff. That asbestos is definitely a problem when used in large quantities. And the people who worked in asbestos environments or heating environments where they were using it for insulation. The mesothelioma, basically the fibers get into your lung and your lung can't expel the fibers, and so you build a scar tissue and you lose lung capacity. You're pulling air in, but it's not absorbing into the body. You can't breathe, so you basically drowned. It's very, very horrible, but it's not usually linked to the chrysotile asbestos that we find in the residential. So it's not quite as big a hazard as what, in my opinion, is what some people make it out to be.
Next, email from Ann, who says, I'm having a problem with mice in my home. I think they come in through the garage. She says, I found mouse droppings in my upstairs bedroom on the bed. Formerly, I have only found mice in the area next to the garage. Are there any methods that would be effective against mice in the home except what I have been using, which are mouse traps?
Mouse traps are very effective for mice once they've gotten into the house. If you've got mice in the garage, probably the best thing that I could recommend would be to get some bait or bait stations and put it out. Generally, the poison used in mouse bait, once a mouse eats the bait, it dehydrates them and they look for a source of water. And usually that is outside the house. Unfortunately, it does not work well if you have lots of cats and dogs, because if the mice are ill and they're caught by a household pet, then a little bit of the poison could be ingested by the pet. So you have to be careful with that. But if you don't have a cat running loose in the garage, then yes, I would probably put some mouse bait out. Chances are if you had a cat running loose in the garage, the mice wouldn't be there anyway. Mice bait, and one of the places you might want to consider putting it would be the attic area, because yes, you've seen them in the garage and you've seen a little bit in the house. What you probably haven't done is gone up in the attic, and they love to nest in that nice fluffy white and pink stuff up there in the attic. So a couple of blocks of mouse bait up in the attic areas will do wonders at preventing them from coming back to the house.
What are the most common problems that when it comes to home maintenance that creep up over the course of the holidays? You know, these next few weeks?
Well, it's one that I always worry about, and that's extension cords. Everybody wants to put out all these Christmas lights and get lots and lots of extension cords. Try and limit the number of extension cords. An extension cord, every time you add another load to a circuit, you have to draw more heat. And the extension cords you're buying these days are pretty inexpensive extension cords. You get a little 99-cent extension cord, and you get 42 sets of lights on there. That thing's going to get hot. What I would recommend is if you've got a lot of electrical additions for the holidays, decorations, etc., after they've been on for a while, go and feel the plug near the wall and see if it's warm to the touch. If it's warm to the touch, rather than add more lights to that circuit, we need to run another circuit out to that and divvy some of the lights up onto another circuit or onto another cord. Because once you start adding multiple strands of lights, most of the newer lights don't use a lot of power. But then we start getting the blow-up Santa dolls, the blow-up Christmas decorations that have an electric motor to keep them alive. And you get four or five of those on an extension cord, and yeah, we're using more power than what we should be. So that would be my big fear for the holidays is decorations.
Have you ever seen this made its way through via YouTube, through social media, the Halloween house? I don't know if you're familiar with this. Someone connected quite a lot of lights outside their home and then basically had them tripping on and off in time to various music with lots of faces singing at you. And it's really impressive, but I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, how many extension cords was that?
Well, hopefully if they put that much time and planning into it, they also put some time and planning into the electrical sources so that they didn't end up with feedback on things.
Scott Spees, as always, thank you for joining us.
All right, Craig, thanks for having me on the show.
And we welcome any additional thoughts that you may have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk about some of the latest computer and tablet products on the market with Donna Tappellini, senior editor at Consumer Reports. Then we'll be joined by Jim Irick from the National Center for Supercomputing Applications. He will troubleshoot and, if possible, diagnose your computer problems, offer some online security tips, and answer other questions that you may have about your computers or tablets. That's on tomorrow's program. Then on Wednesday, we'll discuss the past, present, and future of Afghanistan with Tamim Ansari, a writer, lecturer, editor, and teacher, and author of Games Without Rules, The Often Interrupted History of Afghanistan. Today's show is produced by Travis Stanzel. Kyle Mabries, our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.